61-yarder is on its way, and it is good. He did it.
Jake Elliott with a 61-yard field goal last night there before halftime. Very entertaining Thursday night NFL football game. Lots of things to talk about that one. As the Eagles beat the Vikings 34-28, welcome to the Sports Ticket, Wade and Dusty with you. Minnesota led 7-3. They're in the game 10-7. Justin Jefferson looks like he's going in for a touchdown, fumbles. The ball goes forward and out of the end zone, and I still don't understand why the defense gets the ball at the 20. But that's what happens. You fumble the ball out of the end zone. And that was one of four turnovers for the Vikings. All were fumbles, and yet the Vikings still only lost by six. Jalen Hurts ran for two TDs, but the story of the night was DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift, 28 carries, 175 yards, and a touchdown. Of course, started his career with the Detroit Lions. Kirk Cousins, not his fault that he didn't win a primetime game. 364 yards, four touchdowns. Vikings only had the ball 20 of the 60 minutes of the game and still put up all those yards and all those points, and despite four turnovers, still almost won in Philadelphia. So the Vikings are 0-2. They have their issues, but there are some things to be positive about. The Eagles have their issues, and they're 2-0. Wide receiver Justin Jefferson, 11 interceptions, 159 yards last night, tied Hall of Fame receiver Lance Allworth for the fewest games needed to reach 5,000 career receiving yards. Both players reached that mark in their 52nd game. Jefferson also joined Hall of Famer and former Vikings great Randy Moss as the only players to reach 5,000 career receiving yards before they've turned 25. Holy shnikes, that is pretty impressive. Eagles are 2-0, Vikings are 0-2, but as I said, I think there's reason for the Vikings to be optimistic in regards to, hey, you know, don't turn the ball over, we win. And if you're the Eagles, you're going, okay, week one, we won, but we could have easily lost. We got a pick six that saved our bacon a little bit against the Patriots. And then last night, you know, Justin Jefferson, if he scores a touchdown there, and that's not a fumble at the goal line, Vikings are up 14-10. Next thing you know, it was 27-7, and the Vikings are trying to come back. So, very interesting game last night. I wouldn't write off the Vikings, and I do think the Eagles have some things they've got to work out. Supposedly, their defense is so great. Dude, when you give up over 400 yards of offense and 28 points in only 20 minutes of a football game, I mean, I know you probably had loose coverages at times being up 27-7, but that Eagles defense is supposed to be better than that. And it's just 2 weeks, and the Eagles will be happy to be 2-0 and work on their problems. And the Vikings are like, oh, we're 0-2. Not as room for air. So that was a really good game last night, Thursday night football. We're going to talk Chiefs. We're going to talk NFL coming up here in a little bit. But first, the weekend sports schedule, and then we'll preview high school football.
Sports. I'm going to actually give some results from yesterday.
Oh, that's right. Too. I forgot about that.
The Smith Center Cross Country Invitational, as Osborne took first place. Team-wise, individually, Madison Howland of Smith Center was first at 19:31.53. She was a little over 2 minutes better than second place. Kate Kendig of Osborne coming in second. Rada Berticelli of Osborne finished in third place. Also, boys' team standing, St. John's finished first there at Smith Center. Johnny Hamel of Osborne, first place, 17:33.38 was his time. Aiden Conrad of Osborne was second, in third place to Jonas Letourneau of St. John's. Those are your top finishers. Also at Clay Center, Lance Landina, boy, finished in fourth place in the individual boys' standings there. You can find the full results for the Smith Center, Clay Center, and Bennington. We had a couple area teams there at Bennington as well. Didn't have any real high finishes, but you can find those full results at ncksports.com. So that's what's on the docket from yesterday. Also, Ashlyn Knight of Beloit finished in second place at the Marysville tournament yesterday in number one singles for the Beloit tennis team as they were competing there. And Maya Mim started with a loss, but after that went 2-1. She finished the day 2-2 in third place. And then we'll have the full results for Beloit anyway posted here later this morning at ncksports.com. There's a lot of volleyball coming up this weekend for area teams. You can find all those schedules. Beloit, Smith Center, Lakeside are all competing at the Republic County Tournament this weekend. And we have Rock Hills, Lincoln, Sylvan, Lucas, Pike Valley, and Southern Cloud all competing at the Tescott Tournament coming up tomorrow. Again, you can find all the match schedules, the pool play matches, everything you need to see and know about those matches, all on the individual team schedule at ncksports.com. So don't miss that here this weekend. Beloit tennis is also at Clay Center coming up on Saturday as well. So let's look at what's going on here this weekend as far as high school sports are concerned. High school football coming up tonight here on Katy Country 94, Z96.3 The Lake, and also the Beloit Trojan Channel at NCKSSports.com. It's week three of the high school football season. We'll start things with the Football Express, presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 540, as we'll preview the area league matchups here this evening. Pre-game's at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock, Katy Country 94, and the Beloit Trojan Channel at NCKSSports.com. Beloit is at Republic County. And then on Z96.3 through the Lake, Logan Palko at Lakeside. What pregame again, 6:30, kickoff, 7 o'clock. Myself and Todd Clover will be calling the action there from Downs. Wade will be in Belleville with Beloit at Republic County. And we'll conclude our coverage of the local high school football scoreboard show presented by State Farm Insurance in Beloit and Osborne at 10:05. Here tonight on Katy Country 94. Stay tuned for all of that coverage here on our stations. Other immediate area games that are going on tonight in football, week three. Hanover's at Osborne. Lincoln is at St. John's Tipton. That's in Tipton. Rock Hills is hosting Pike Valley tonight. Thunder Ridge heading to Hill City. Sylvan Lucas is hosting Bennington in the MPL. And in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center is at Russell. And the NCKL, Concordia, heads to Wamego here tonight. So that's a look at what's going on. You can find a complete schedule for all the NCAA league teams and all that. Again, NCKSSports.com, week three of the high school football season here tonight. And we are looking forward to it.
All right, we'll start with your game.
Yeah, Logan Palko, Lakeside. We've got two teams here that they have one common opponent in Lynn, as Lakeside beat Lynn by 14 in week one, and Logan Palko lost to Lynn last week at their place by 12. You don't always look at comparative scores, but since they do have a competitive opponent and a comparative opponent, we kind of looked at that there. Lakeside does come in 2-0, two very high-scoring wins over Lynn in week one, and last week against Reno County Homeschool, 56-52. Logan Palko went just 1-8 last year, but they opened the season with a win over Stockton and lost to Lynn there last week. So it's a game on Z96.3 through the Lake again tonight. Drew Dusky, the head coach of Lakeside, is looking at this matchup and wants his defense to be ready to go here tonight against a good Logan Palko offense.
Our defensive, you know, methods aren't going to change a whole lot. We might move some people around and try some different things, but we just got to play sound. You know, we've got to flow to the ball, and we've got to get off blocks and tackle when they're running. And we've got to make sure we can get pressure on their quarterback and not just give him time to find open receivers.
So, again, they're looking to slow down that Logan offense, which is more of a passing offense than they've ever really been that I've seen them. So they're opening it up a little bit in that area with Rhett Katz, their quarterback, and I have some experience coming back there at some ends. I did get an email from the coach this morning, said I might be changing some things. We had some stuff happening this week in practice. So I don't know what that means, but he's
Which coach is that?
From Coach Jenner at Logan Palko. I was like, I guess I'll wait until you make that game time decision then. So maybe something interesting happening tonight. But anyway, Logan Palko, Coach Mike Jenner, he's looking at slowing down Ian Kersine as being the key to this game here tonight.
First thing is we've got to try to contain Kersine kid. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete. Fast, pretty stout kid. He's not real big, but he doesn't back down. And he's going to get his yards. We've just got to try to limit him to his yards he does get. Just play our game.
Again, that's Mike Jenner, back as the head coach after taking a couple years off there at Logan Palko, and he had some success in the past and looking to turn that thing back around for the Trojans. Again, Lakeside hosting Logan Palko tonight. Pregame 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock. Z96.3 through the Lake, KatyCountry94.com from Downs. I'll be there with Todd Clover here tonight.
All right, I'll be up in Belleville, Republic County, hosting Beloit. Both teams are off to 0-2 starts. Beloit played Ellsworth, lost in week one, barely, and then Republic County, they lost Ellsworth last week, down 56-0 at halftime, lost big time, 62-6. Republic County's been outscored 121-6. Beloit's 11-1 all time against Republic County. But I was looking at this and pulled this up last night. It's kind of interesting. Since Brad Gober's been the head coach at Beloit, Beloit's never started 2-0. They've never started 2-0. And that's not a knock. It's just it's kind of interesting. 2017, in his first year, Beloit went 1-1, 18-1-1, 19-1-1. 2020 started 0-2. You know how that season ended in 2020? Two-way state semifinals.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2021, they started 1-2. Oh, my God, the world, everything is falling around us. What are we going to do? Made it to the two-way state championship game. Last year, oh, dear Lord, we're 0-2. What are we going to do? 1-8 in a row, made it to the state quarterfinals against Kingman, a very good team, who knocked off Southeast Saline in the state semifinals. And Southeast was really, really good. The point I'm trying to make here is very clear. It's early. It's early. And those are not district games. A loss to Ellsworth, a loss to Southeast Saline, those are not district games. We don't, and no league champion should be crowned when you only play half the league anyway. But there is a school that does that. So, Brad Gober, a matchup tonight. It is a league school. It is a not a district game. Next week is when the real season begins. Boyd hosts Russell. Russell's an improved team. They're playing Smith Center tonight. That'll be an interesting result. And Beloit will host that next week. They're without their starting quarterback, Quinn Islet, out due to injury. They hope to have him back maybe in time for the playoffs. Don't know exactly the timeline. Some people have been saying 3 to 6 weeks, so we shall see. Younger people heal a lot faster than us older people. So here's Brad Gober, not worried about the opponent, worried about themselves.
We have got to go out there and play our brand of football. And I told the kids, we challenged the kids on Monday, you know, we can't hide the film from them, you know. We know what we're looking at. But, you know, I've challenged them. This is like we're 0-2, and, like, we got to go out there and play well and do what we do and just build that some more of that confidence.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's about winning tonight, as you're expected to, against Republic County team that their biggest kid on the line is 182 pounds. Beloit out. Gain or not out gains, they outweigh the opposing line anywhere from 60 to 90 pounds a man. Then add that Republic County starts 7 underclassmen, 4 freshmen, and 3 sophomores. And 2 of their returning starters from last year, or at least you thought they would be returning starters, are on the roster, but they're not listed on the 2 deep. So I don't know if they're hurt, don't know if they're not playing anymore, whatever the case may be. Yeah, I tell you, I feel so sorry for Republic County in so many ways in regards to all the sports over the last so many years. You know, I've talked about it before. The girls' basketball team, Avery Stinn, is an all-leaguer. And how she's not a first-team all-leaguer is she's being punished because her team doesn't win very many games. It's not her fault that she's the best player and there's nobody to really, you know, be a really good cohort, you know? Be a Robin to her Batman. There is nobody. And it's still a joke that she wasn't all league. I've never met the girl, but I've seen her play. Mm-hmm. She's an all leaguer. She gets punished for that. And I'm trying to think of what it's like for her. And this happens in other schools. I mean, you have it might be a certain program within your school. Like you have other sports that do well, and one just never does well. That happens. Mm-hmm. Well, we're a football school or a basketball school or a baseball school or whatever it might be. But Republic County, it's just been so tough for a while. There's a few years ago, they had a decent year, you know, and they beat Beloit. Box the Kid had a huge day. Mm-hmm. So they've had some moments. Basketball, they've really struggled in boys and girls basketball for quite some time. But only 10 years ago, they were state champs in boys basketball. Mm-hmm. Football, they just overall struggled. They have these long, long losing streaks. And they've had a lot of changes in coaches, too. And so my point is that, you know, I'm trying to think, if my kid was a part of that, it would be tough, wouldn't it, to come to practice every day or to go out for sports? And I think what happens is there are kids that don't go out for sports because either they're embarrassed or they don't want to be a part of a tradition that is losing. And that's why it takes special kids. It takes special kids. It takes special coaches, special people to take on a job where, hey, this is not good here. Okay, I'm just using that as an example. I mean, in regards to the success of the sports programs for the most part at this particular school. And I feel for those kids and those that are putting themselves out there because it can take time. All you got to do, and I know college and high school are a little bit different, but all you got to do is look at K-State football. That was embarrassing. Like, you didn't want to walk around Manhattan, Kansas and say you're a football player before Bill Snyder. You weren't proud of it. In fact, you were the reason you were there is because you probably weren't even that good to start with because they were the only one that would take you because they're that desperate. All you got to look at is KU football. I mean, here not too long ago, so god awful. Men's basketball is great, but football is so awful they're a laughing stock. And if you compare the numbers record wise, KU versus K State, they're very, very similar. The pre Bill Snyder years and the pre Lance Leipold years. So it took a very special person in Bill Snyder to turn things around and be willing to take on the job and the monumental challenge, right? And there's other coaches that have tried it, hasn't worked, and kudos to them for trying. There's been the kids that, like, you know what? I could leave here, but I want to be a part of something special. K-State had that. I don't know what player stayed when Bill Snyder came on. That was a long, long time ago. That was way back when I was a teenager. But But KU football was more recent. That, you know, the Devin Neal kid could have easily went somewhere else. You know, Puka Williams could have went after his first year. Now, it didn't go so well after that. But the point is that there's some kids that want to be a part of something from the very beginning. They want to work from the ground up. They want to be a part of changing everything. Mm-hmm. And they might not reap the benefits. You know, they might be a freshman or a sophomore. They stick it out. In their senior year, they still don't have the success they wanted. But they know that things are starting to go in the right direction. And then they might be removed from college 3 or 4 years, and they're a proud KU or K-State football alum going, yeah, I helped change that. Mm-hmm. I helped turn that around. How many times have you heard, I remember Bill Snyder saying it, I know I hear Lance Leipold say it, is that, you know, these guys, the reason we are here today, and I've heard other programs talk about it, the reason we're here today is because there were some guys that stuck around and helped us build something special. And it has to happen at the high school level as well. And sometimes you have traditions that just carry on almost no matter what. You know, Smith Center football, they just, you know, they plug away and they do things the right way. They're successful, and there's really not a major pullback, right? You look at college sports, there are teams that are always good almost all the time, it seems like. KU basketball would be one. Obviously, Alabama football, though they had a spell there where they were not very good with, I think Mike Shula was their coach. But the point I'm trying to make is, it's got to be tough. It's got to be tough when you've got to deal with the adversity of getting through a really bad season, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whether you're a parent, whether you're a fan. And I see this in youth sports from this standpoint. And it's funny because it even happens in it happens in parks and rec sports. It happens in park and rec basketball. I've seen it happen with park and rec soccer. I've seen it happen with flag football, where there are parents that immediately want to go team up with another parent because they know that their kid is good, or they want their kid to be on that kid's team because that kid is a star player in their grade. And you know what that's about? That's about winning.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that's about. So when you keep doing that over and over and over, okay, yeah, you might have that stacked team. How the hell are you going to deal with adversity when you get into high school? Because I can tell you right now that I coach flag football, and this is just flag football, okay? Just an example, all right? I coached flag football for 4 years. I was an assistant, I think, the first couple years. Third year, I volunteered to be an assistant. The head coach couldn't make it to the draft. I had a presentation to give that evening, didn't find out about a draft until 24 hours before, which I could have maybe made it had I had more of a heads up, but that's just the way it was then. And so I couldn't make it. So there was a parent, a mom, that was the only one that could make it, that didn't know anything about the kids, like who was good and athletic. And these other coaches, who were all guys, knew exactly who the best players were, and from what I understand, didn't really help out this lady. And my son was on that team, my oldest son. Now he's a senior. And we had a really bad football team, okay, in regards to talent. We just didn't have the talent, football-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an assistant coach, and, you know, I didn't get a shop for the groceries, as Bill Parcells would say, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you go with the team you got. We didn't stack our team clearly. And we had a bad flag football season. We didn't win a game until the end of the year. And of all the flag football games I coached in 4 years, I'm just using flag football as an example. In the 4 years that I coached flag football, you know the game I remember the most? We won the league title, or whatever you want to call it, in Parks and Rec a couple of times. And we had a stacked team a couple of times. And I remember a mom of a particular player, of a classmate of my son's, as soon as the season was over, was trying to stack the team with coaches for the next year. And this is Parks and Rec flag football, for crying out loud. Like, dear God. You know, it's okay if your kid actually loses a game. You might learn something from it. So we had a bad team. The kids were fine, but they were squirrely. A few kids were out because mom and dad made them go out. They didn't want to go out. It was very clear. And so the last game of the year, we were playing to not be last place. It was the last place game, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And we won in like double or triple overtime. Crazy, crazy game. And the very last, we were tied. We had a chance to win it in the second or third overtime. And our kids were excited because we were actually had a chance to win a game, because we got blown out all year long. And my kid was down a little bit at that time. He was, what, probably 10 years old. He was a little bit down because he'd been spoiled. The 2 years before, we were loaded. Mm. This year, we weren't. So, yeah, he was down, but he had to learn something. And that was fight through adversity. He didn't quit. He didn't give up. I told him, you give your effort. You give your best. If you're going to go out for something, you give it everything you got. Even if your team isn't that good, you still owe it to your teammates to give it everything that you got. That's, as a coach and a dad, that's what I try to instill in my kids, is if you go out for something, you need to, you are committed. And I don't let my kids quit that stuff. Even if they're miserable, you're not quitting. You're going to finish it because you started it. Now, if you don't want to go out the next year, fine. I get it. But you've already, in this season, you finish it. And so I remember that I was in a huddle calling the plays, and I told the kids, I said, guys, this is going to score a touchdown. We're going to win the game, because I saw a tendency from the other team, and I knew that we can do a little counterplay. And it was, and my kid was the running back. So our lineman did a nice job, and my kid goes, and he scores a touchdown, and we win the game. Mass hysteria. You would have thought we won the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. We were the Bad News Bears. We sucked. Just going to be honest. We were bad. But we avoided going winless. We avoid being in last place. But the kids didn't think about any of that. They actually got the sweet nectar of winning one dang game. And my son was lifted up on the shoulders of our biggest lineman. I mean, it was like Rudy, for crying out loud. I coached flag football for 4 years. We played probably 8 to 10 games, so that's probably, what, 30 games? That's the game I remember the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many people are way too freaking caught up in winning at all costs when their kids are 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. You got to get a grip. Because you're not teaching your kid anything when you stack your teams and you automatically win all the time. That's like giving your kid everything they want when they ask for it. At some point, you got to stand up, put your foot down, and say, hell no. Because when they get out in the real world, guess what? Not everybody's going to give you what you want. So you have to fight through adversity. Life's going to throw you curveballs. You have no idea what's going to happen. You could have a great life and everything's going perfect and some horrible tragedy happens. If you've never dealt with adversity in your life, how in the hell are you going to deal with it then? You might be able to, mm-hmm. but you're not as equipped to handle it. And whether that's sports, whether that's, you know, troubles in debate class or going to a debate tournament or band or choir, whatever it might be, every single person and a young kid, you have to go through adversity. And there are so many helicopter parents out there that want to just rig it to where their kid can never lose. It's winning at all cost. Let me tell you something. When these kids get to be my age and your age and even younger, I guarantee you they don't remember what their record was in third grade youth sports. They don't remember winning trophies. You know what they remember usually? Is their friends. They remember something funny that happened that might have had nothing to be, it might have been on the sideline of the game. Or they might remember an amazing play, probably odds are these kids that I coached that year when we won one game, they might not remember this game years later. But I do. I do. And it was even more rewarding for me as a dad and as a parent to win that game. That was for second to last place.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw our kids never gave up. They didn't, you know, hang their heads all the time, which they easily could have done. And they could have pissed and moaned about everything going against them, which some adults do. They kept at it. And you know what? They got rewarded at the end. And sometimes there isn't always a reward or a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow when you put yourself out there in sports. So getting back to Republic County as my example, I commend all of these kids that put themselves out there knowing that, you know what, the odds are we're not going to have a great year, mm-hmm. or I know what's around us talent-wise, but you still go out there and represent your school. And yeah, there might be people that make fun of you because you guys have got a certain losing streak, or people might make fun of you because you've been blown out. And you know, those people aren't your supporters anyway. Those are not your true fans. And you might not have as many people in the stands to support you when you're losing. And when you're losing, you need more support more than when you're winning. We've talked about that before, especially at this level. But I feel for teams that are winless or have a really bad year, I feel bad for them. I feel bad if they get blown out left and right every single week. I feel bad for the coaches. I feel bad for the kids. And you say, well, the coach has got to coach better. Listen, sometimes the cupboard is bare, okay? You might have the greatest kids, but they just don't have the talent. Or it just don't have the chemistry. And so when you are a part of a winning team, you need to enjoy it. You need to bask in it. You need to soak it in. But if every single person in athletics had to experience at least one really rough year, whether it's in high school, junior high, or all the way back in grade school, whether it's parks and rec sports or a traveling team, you would be better for it. Trust me on that. But when mommy and daddy are going to make sure that you're on the four best players or all coaches to be on the best team, you're not teaching your kid anything. All you're doing is you're rigging it so that you can win something that is more important to you than for your own children. And that's one thing that has really, really alarms me as I see this over and over through the years. And it's getting worse every single year that I see this. I see it locally. I see it regionally. I see it across the state. I see it across the country. And at the end of the day, sports is about teaching lessons in life. It's not about rigging the game. It's about overcoming obstacles. Sports helps you later on in life in so many different ways that many people don't understand how sports helps you. But I can tell you, sports can help you deal with adversity. And as much as you want to shelter your children and put together the all-star teams and you want to select who the best kids are and you want to, you know, make sure that all the dads or moms of the best kids are collectively on one team so that you can just cruise and crush everybody in your little league or whatever you're playing in, you can go ahead and shelter as much as you want. Eventually, you're going to have a rude awakening. And you're not going to know how to really deal with it. So I am thankful. At the time, I wasn't. I'm not going to lie. I'm a competitive person. When the team was released and I saw who was on my kid's team so many years ago, I'm like, oh, dear goodness. Well, this is going to be a challenge. And I was like, I really wish I would have known the draft was, you know, not 24 hours ahead of time. I wish I knew 72 hours. I could have been there. It would have been different. That was my initial thought. But then after I quit feeling sorry for myself, which took a couple minutes, I was like, okay, well, you know, it's still football. We're still coaching kids. The kids want to play. They're out to play. We'll do the best we can. It's also supposed to be fun instead of so damn serious. And at the end of the year, after the ups and downs and all the stuff we had to do with getting kids to focus to just run one play in practice, it was like we were like herding cats. We were like the Bad News Bears, if you've seen the movie a little bit. But at the end of the season, we were rewarded for that. Now, that doesn't always happen. That doesn't always happen. You could be part of a team that goes 0-20. You know, you were part of bad teams at Waukini.
Well, and
we were part of bad football teams at Waukini, and we were a laughing stock. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Beloit, or not Beloit. Waukini is going to go 2-7. We know we always beat Ellis and we beat Hill City, but we're not going to beat anybody else. And then there's other teams going, well, I'd love to have two wins. That'd be great. Mm-hmm. We're 0-9. It's just we get to the point where we're so spoiled. And we don't, like, right now, Chiefs fans are super gigantically spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
The younger ones don't even know what it was like to be a part of a 2-14 team, and your number one overall draft pick was Eric Fisher, okay? Or Brody Croyle or Tyler Thigpen were your quarterbacks. They don't understand. Like, I'll give you a great example here. The other day, the Seahawks are my youngest son's favorite team, right? And they lost. They got beat by the Rams. And I think they're going to be good still, but and he's kind of like, oh man, we're bad. And I'm like, yep. I said, yep, but I still got my Chiefs. He goes, well, your Chiefs lost. I said, yeah, but I said they're going to be fine. I said, it's 1 week. You're okay. Seahawks will be fine too. And he says, Dad, do you know how it feels? Do you know how it feels to go through? I don't know how he worded it, but he's like, do you know how it feels to be a part of a team, or I don't know how he worded it, or your team being bad, or I don't know how he worded it. I said, Oh, dear Lord. And my wife was in the kitchen, and I rattled off five memories of Chiefs football, horrible disappointments, and I rattled them off back-to-back, didn't even hesitate, didn't stutter, didn't even pause. It was one big breath, five straight examples. I went through, well, we were in a playoff game and didn't force the other team to punt. We blew a 38-10 lead in Indianapolis, lost 45-44. We had a kicker, missed three field goals in a game. We had the wrong quarterback starting a game when we lost in the playoffs to the Denver Broncos. I went through five. Boom, 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 boom. I said, son, I know what disappointment is. I know how it hurts when your team loses. It hurts even more when you're actually on the team.
When you're part of it, yeah.
It hurts even more. We sit here as fans and we're like, boo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo-h invested. You don't think they're hurting when they lose a game? Of course they are, man. If you're out for sports, usually you're competitive, in particular at the pro and college levels. So we sometimes get all into this, feel sorry for ourselves, but the people that put themselves out there, whether it's pro, college, and I know pro, you get paid. But listen, I'll give you an example. The Madison kid, running back for the Vikings last night, had some problems holding on to the football. He's their new starting running back of the Vikings. They lost four fumbles overall as a team, as I talked about. The Vikings lost, right? Have you seen? He put out there, there are people telling him to put a gun to his head and kill himself after last night's game. I mean, we got the snapshots of the tweets. They're telling him he's a clown. They're telling him he's a moron. They're telling him he's so dumb. The only thing he can do is play football, and now he can't do that, that he needs to go do something else. I mean, these are death threats. These are after one game or two games, go back to Idaho. And this player shared with everybody, this isn't right. I don't do this for you to feel sorry for me. This is not right.
No.
And he's absolutely correct. And so you sit here and you say, well, yeah, but they're making lots of money. That didn't give you the right to treat people like crap. But that's what some people do. And Wade, they put themselves out there, but they're getting paid a lot. They're still human. They bleed just like we do. They cry just like we do. They laugh just like we do. They're not robots. Well, they're making a lot of money. Oh, so that gives you the right to call them horrible names and tell them to kill himself? Where the hell do you get off? What is wrong with you? You need to see somebody. These are fans that are actually, like, it's one thing to think it. It's another to send a tweet, type it all out, and send it. What is wrong with people? That running back puts himself out there. The pros do it. The college athletes do it. The high school kids do it. The junior high kids do it. The kids that go out just playing, you know, flag football on Saturday morning or soccer. And we get to the point where some of these adults treat it like it's a professional sport. And they have no idea the pressure because, you know what? They didn't have to go through it when they were younger. It wasn't as big a deal then. There wasn't the social media influence and pressure. So I go back to my original thing. I respect and I feel for those that put themselves out there, maybe knowing deep down that this probably isn't going to get better, but they don't just quit and give up. And that's what I want to say about the kids at Republic County or other schools that don't have maybe that success that some of us are spoiled with. I'm sorry I went off on a tangent. I apologize for wrecking the show. But I am getting kind of fed up with some of this stuff. And like I say, I see it more with younger parents now. I'm seeing it more with younger parents. And then I'm worried about the next generation. Because if that generation, the younger parents, like in their, you know, 20s in particular, I've noticed, or maybe in their 30s. And I know I sound like an old fart when I say that. But I'm really worried about where that's going. I'm really, really, really concerned. Kids have enough pressures in life. They don't need mom and dad. They don't need screaming and yelling. And they don't need to, and then at the same time, they don't need to shelter their kids so much to where they make it sure that their kid never loses a soccer game in Parks and Rec at the age of 10 or 11 or 9.
Yeah, I
get a grip.
I just want to add real quick, you know, an experience, because I've sat through it before. Like, I've been there.
You've
like,
been there, too.
Like, there were 2 years where our basketball team at Trigo went 2-38, and one season we won 2 games. So you do the math on the second season. We didn't win a game. And so it was, you know, there's – it's interesting that you bring up, you know, you're the one game you remember the most, right? And it wasn't from a year that you guys won a championship or anything like that. So, you know, I kind of sat there, and I, like – we were 2-38 my sophomore and junior year combined in basketball, and I sat on the bench.
See, let me repeat that. 2-38.
Yeah, 2-18 one year, 0-20 the second.
Dear Lord.
We came up to Beloit 2 years in a row and got crushed. Yeah. Once by Beloit, once by Belleville, the first round of sub-state.
And you probably knew
these
that was going to happen.
We knew they were going to happen.
Sure.
And we had – listen, I'm not trying to put anybody on blast, but we had people in the class above me that knew they were going to lose, right?
Right,
and they were talking about, like, they'd be, there's one person in particular that I remember going through the halls one day and like, how bad do you think we're going to lose tonight? And it's like, well, I don't know if that's the attitude we need to have. I know we're going to lose, but I don't know if we need to be talking about how bad we're going to lose during school. Mm-hmm. That wasn't everybody, and he still gave max effort. He played as hard as he could. And we had, you know, I think 2 years where, you know, those classes just didn't have, and I'm not saying my class was great athletically, right? But had won 7 by the time we were seniors. I didn't play, but anyway, getting back to the point of, you know, sitting there and going through it, I played a little bit of RC minutes those 2 years, right? So I played a lot of JV. What was my saving grace is we were around 500 both years on JV. So I got to experience plenty of wins, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I still got to experience winning, excuse me. But the one thing I always remember about those 2 years, we played a NOQT JV tournament every year, Norton Oakley Quinter Trigo. And so we hadn't won a medal in that tournament for quite some time in JV. And it was our sophomore year. And the only thing I remember, we won the first game, got to the championship game. It was a 4-team bracket. You just, if you got lucky, you got into the championship, right? And so you're playing for first and second. I think we were playing Norton that year. Norton should have blasted us even in JV. And we kept it to like 6 or 8, I think, in the end. All I remember is Coach Schubert coming in the locker room after we got our second place medals. He holds up that medal. He's like, guys, this is the first medal I've ever won as a coach.
Wow.
He's like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Like, you guys played your hearts out today. You played your butts off.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that team should have beat us by 30.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I'm proud of this silver medal, right? This is the first medal I've ever won. He went on to win a state championship as a coach, right?
That's pretty
cool. Take girls' teams to state tournaments too, right?
But I bet he remembers that
game. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's like, that's what I remember, right? Mm-hmm. Like, from that year that we went, those 2 years we went 2-38 was me being a starter on JV both of those years and playing my butt off for a coach that respected me and loved our team, right? And eventually that showed out because he got the job as the head coach, right? And would always fight for me. And so that's what I, something from my high school basketball I'll never forget. We didn't win varsity games, but mm-hmm. that day we got second place, and it was his first ever medal that he won, and he was just overjoyed.
Yeah.
And it was like, man, that's what this is about, right? Like, I can be down and sad that our varsity is not winning games.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I'm not playing a lot of minutes on varsity.
Right.
And I'm contributing to something that mm-hmm. made this dude's day or year or mm-hmm. coaching life at that point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so those are the things I remember. Like, it wasn't fun to sit there on the bench and watch your team and then get minutes toward the end of the game and just you're losing by 30. 30-point rule was just into effect that at that time.
It was put in just because of you guys.
Yeah. And so that junior year, I mean, there was a lot of games where that clock was running at the end. And, and unfortunately, I got in to play some of those games at the end. And it was just like, that wasn't fun.
No.
And it wasn't fun for the varsity that couldn't play JV.
Absolutely.
To get wins.
And that's a great story. It's a great story that you shared. And you remember that.
Yeah.
And your coach remembers that. John says, and the older you get and the further removed you get from the game, the more you realize the winning or losing was the least important part of it all. You know, John, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. As you get older, you get a little wiser, you understand things are a little bit more important than back, you know, way back then. And I'll give you another example, and then we'll move on to back to our rundown of what we're going to talk about today on the show and preview college football and pro football and all that good jazz. I recently attended the Ken Piazza celebration at the Down Under in Beloit. I've never met Ken Piazza, never met him, talked to him on the phone, I think once. I've never met him. I heard all kinds of amazing stories before he passed away. And I have people that I've talked to that I know that are now older than me, of course. Thankfully, I'm finally younger than somebody. But they were former wrestlers of Ken Piazza's. And they've talked, and I've heard the stories about, you know, yeah, they talk about they won their state titles. That was nice and all. But when I was at the celebration, and it was really nice because I was invited, and I don't have a history with the wrestling program back then because I wasn't even around Beloit. I was 7 years old, to make everybody out there that was part of that feel really old. But what stood out to me, and I went there, and John, I hope you, I think John can relate to this too. I went there, and I was like, I want to be there. I was honored to be invited and be a part of it. And I really didn't know fully what to expect. I didn't overthink anything, you know. They were really appreciative, the Piazza family, of the things that I said on the radio and the sports ticket about Coach Piazza and what he accomplished and what he meant and so forth and so on. And so it was 5 to 7 o'clock was a celebration there at Beloit. The funeral had been a few months prior. I don't remember exactly when it was, but that was up in New Prague, Minnesota. And so I pull up at 5:30, and there's a ton of cars already there. So I got to walk a little further than I normally do to Down Under. And I go in, and there's a lot of people there. And obviously, I know it's former wrestlers, football players, because Ken Piazza was also an assistant coach on the football team for Beloit back in the day. And so I go in there, I see some of the pictures they had out front, and I get to meet Ken Piazza's wife, Jean, which was really, really, really cool. And she had so many nice things to say about, you know, what we do or what we said about her husband. My original plan was to go in there, and I'd probably be there for 30 to 45 minutes, and I'll be back in plenty of time. Chiefs game against the Lions will start at 7:20. I'll be home. I'll eat or whatever I'll do. So I go in there. I get there at 5:30. And I know some of these people, but there are a lot of these people I don't know. I had never met Clayton Williams, who was, you know, a football coach of those state championship teams back in the 70s of the football team. Three straight titles. And he was looking at me as I came in, and he introduced himself. He's very nice, and we introduced each other. And then later on, I was talking to Dallas Cox, and we were talking about some stuff about coaching, youth coaching, things like that. And Clayton comes over, Clayton Williams, Coach Williams comes over, starts talking to Dallas and me. And Clayton Williams starts, I mean, he just goes on and on, which was a good thing, about different players and different things that he remembered. And then I talked with other people there as well, and they were talking about football memories or wrestling memories. I actually heard more football memories than wrestling memories, believe it or not. And so I soak all this in. And now that we talk about this, out of all those stories I heard, I don't remember a single one saying anything or mentioning the I kid you not. I got goosebumps now. I have goosebumps saying this. I do not remember, and I stayed there, not for 45 minutes. I stayed there for 2 hours listening to these stories, having a good time. Met people I hadn't met before. And wrestling had an amazing run, all their state championships, and won a whole bunch of matches in a row, and the football team won three straight titles back in the mid-70s. I never heard a single person I talked to say the word state champs. Think about that for a second. All those championships, the history that they made under Coach Piazza in wrestling and football, you know what I heard? I heard unbelievable stories and memories of road trips to the game. Yeah, they talked about particular games when the weather was horrible. They talked about, yeah, I remember such and such was not a good wrestler, but he drove all the way to see Ken Piazza's funeral, and nobody would probably think that maybe he would do that. That's the impact coach had on him. And he didn't win state championships individually as a wrestler or anything like that. But it just hit me. All that time I was there for 2 hours, not a single person in the conversation I had, and I didn't talk to every single person, not a single person was like raising their glasses and celebrating state championships. They were celebrating the memories. They were celebrating the stories.
And my grandpa was a great storyteller. And I love hearing stories. And I love sharing stories. And I love telling stories. But I also like to soak in some really cool stories. And at that event, those were really cool stories. And I had a great time. And then I actually didn't get home. I missed the first part of the Chiefs game. I was so ingrained into it.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes back to what John just said, you know, in the text. As we get further and further away, we don't, yeah, we know we were good or bad, but that's not what we're talking about. And I think there's a lot of younger families are going to figure this out eventually, too. Now, I would admit, when I was younger, I was probably in the same boat, thinking more competitive and this and that and whatever. And as you get older, they say you get wiser. Some people would argue that that's not the case with me. But it really struck me just now that if there was ever an event where all people should boast and brag about everything it accomplished, that would have been the event.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, it was, yeah, they remember Coach Piazza, and there's memories of him, but a lot of these stories were just in general of being a part of a team, working with different teammates, talking about how coaches were tough on them, and now they appreciate it. Not a single word was uttered about, man, that was so awesome when we held that state championship trophy. Now, granted, I'm sure those memories are there.
Well, sure, yeah.
But that wasn't the stuff that was being talked about. It was all this other stuff. And sometimes we get caught up so much in winning at all costs at so many levels. And that's where everything is going now with sports. It's making it worse. Whether it's travel sports, youth sports, whether it's, you know, conference realignment. And now you got to spend money after money and the heck with everybody just so you can be, you know, in a college football playoff or whatever the case may be. Sometimes you got to take a step back and go, man, are we losing our minds? Have we lost our perspective? You know?
Absolutely. Can't add a lot to that.
All right. Let's get back into it here. KU's 2-0. They have their first road game of the season tomorrow night as they travel to face 0-2 Nevada. Nevada's lost 12 in a row. 9 o'clock pregame. Kickoff at 9:30. I finally get to watch a KU football game because it's not on a Friday night. So that's going to be exciting. I don't know if I can stay up for the whole thing because I'm getting old, as I've established, and I might fall asleep.
Run to the store and grab one of these. You'd be all right.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. What is that?
It's just ghost energy drink.
Okay. You got the Big Bangs.
Sour Patch Kids, yeah.
Big Bangs, Red Bulls, all that good jazz. And maybe I will fall asleep when KU's up 50-0 at halftime, if that's the case. They're a heavy favorite. Landslide pulled on Nevada and the keys to their first road trip.
We've got to go and make sure, first of all, that we play our best and stay focused on the areas that we've got to get better at. You see a lot of athleticism. Nevada's been a program that's had success in the past. They're playing two quarterbacks. They're taking some vertical shots down the field at times and with some accuracy. We've got to be consistent of establishing a line of scrimmage and making teams one-dimensional offensively and making sure that we can stay as multiple as we've been to execute everything we want to.
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one because KU should roll. They're explosive offensively. Their running game at 262 yards rushing against Illinois, who's a much better team in Nevada, at least I believe. Jalen Daniels, you know, I don't know if he'll play this whole game or if he can play at first half and Bean plays the second half. The only thing that I sit here and think is that worries me slightly for KU in this game is it's a long road trip. It's a late night start. You're sitting around a lot during the day ready for the game. You've got to wait longer than normal. And a lot of people are telling you, wow, you crushed Illinois. And I'm not sure how good Illinois is, to be honest with you. I mean, it seems like a nice win. And you hear all the attaboys, and wow, you had six sacks on defense, and defense seems improved, and Jalen's back, and so now we're going to win like we did last year when we started 5-0, and the running game is insane, and all the guys back from last year's team, and it all makes sense. But everything that they've accomplished in the first 2 weeks, in particular the big win over Illinois, is erased if they stumble and get upset tomorrow night. And I don't think they will, but that would be the only thing I would be of caution.
Yeah, I can't. I just don't see them being a team like that, right? Like the way Leipold's got this thing running.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see them just like falling flat in this kind of game.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's a Big 12 team, like that might be toward the bottom of the barrel here.
Yeah.
And you're feeling good about yourself. Like last year,
you just,
like
or you just beat Texas and you turn around and you play Iowa State who's struggling.
Yeah. 5-0 in the conference. Mm-hmm. Like last year, you're playing the bottom team that nobody thinks is going to do anything.
Right.
And then you might trip there, right?
Right.
But this is not the game. I don't think that this is where they have any kind of letdown. I think they're going to go out there and dominate. The only issue I would have is just the late kickoff, whether their minds are right for that part of it.
I agree. And if they win, they're 3-0 and they'll host BYU. It'll be BYU's first Big 12 conference game in the conference, and that'll be in Lawrence. And in that game time now is 2:30 next Saturday, 2:00 pregame. 9:00 pregame tomorrow night, KU at Nevada. First game we'll have on the Jayhawk Network on Z96.3 Lake, since local comes first on high school Fridays, and KU finally playing on a Saturday night, but at a late time. Number 15, K-State. And if KU wins, they could jump into the top 25 possibly next week. K-State ranked 15th, is looking to move to 3-0 as they hit the road for the first time as well. They take on 2-0 Missouri, although Missouri hasn't been that impressive in their wins. They barely got by Middle Tennessee State last week, 23-19. K-State won this meeting in Manhattan last season easily 40-12, but it was bad weather. The ball was hard to hold on to for both quarterbacks, Adrian Martinez and Brady Cook. And he had just 128 yards passing, two interceptions. And Chris Klieman, head coach of Kansas State, not really putting any stock into what happened last year. He knows Brady Cook is a much better player.
Last year, you can throw that game out because that's not him. I think he's a terrific quarterback. I don't know him at all, but just watching him play, he's a tremendous competitor. I think he's a tough kid. I think he throws the ball exceptionally well. He's a very underrated runner. That kid's a very talented runner that worries us running the football, but I think he throws the ball really well.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting game. I don't want to spend a ton of time on it because we are running behind because I get off topic like I did, but... it's 11:00 kickoff. Chris Klieman's been pretty good at 11 a.m. kickoffs. I saw this the other day. It's on SEC Network tomorrow. I think this is going to be a battle. I think there are some K-State fans that I've talked to that seem to just think this is going to be a cakewalk, and I'm confused as to why, other than they just remember last year. Missouri was embarrassed in that game. And they remember that. And this is a chance for Missouri to get a top 15 win, because K-State is 15th. They are the hunted here. They are the favorite, even though Missouri is at home. So it is a tough game. It will be. I think it's going to be a tough game, tougher than many people think. I do think they'll win. I think K-State is the better team, and I think K-State will win. And I think they're going to win by 10, maybe 7-14, but I think they'll win by a score or two. But I think it's going to be a game going into the fourth quarter. Maybe I'm wrong. And I'm underestimating K-State in this situation. Now, I will say this. If K-State goes to Columbia and blows the doors off the Tigers, and their weather's not a factor, and they just go out there and they beat the living tar out of them, then you, K-State fans, you need to be starting to think about what we talked about earlier, the ceiling of 11-1. I think it's absolutely then worth mentioning. I think 10-2 was, from the very beginning, could be mentioned. But you could start saying 11-1. You could start saying, could we get into the college football playoff? That sounds crazy. But if you go 11-1, you're going to have a chance, especially if you beat the big dog, or you beat Texas and Texas beat Alabama. Hello. So now, if your name's Oklahoma or Texas and you're 11-1, you got a better chance of getting into K-State. We've established that over the years. But if K-State goes out and has an impressive performance against Missouri, I guess the question would be, how good is Missouri? Because KU just waxed Illinois. How good is Illinois, in fairness? But that would be an But Illinois was at home for KU. Missouri, hostile environment. Their first non-conference sellout since 2012. Hello? Of course, K-State helps. They bought some tickets, too. I think K-State has a chance to make a gigantic statement. I don't know if they will, but I don't think they're going to lose this game.
Yeah, I've been reserved the first 2 weeks on K-State, and I think that they, as far as the spread and things like that, I think that it's not insane to think that this team has a ceiling of 11-1. It's not insane to think this team could have a ceiling of 12-0. Like, they won a Big 12 championship last year, and people get too focused on losing Deuce Vaughn and Felix, I think. Like, I think it's like, oh, you lost these great pros, Julius Brents, right? Like, you lost these guys that are on professional rosters. How can you be as good? Well, this isn't Chris Klieman and his staff's first rodeo, right? Yeah. Like, everybody knows you got to go recruit and fill those spots in. And, you know, you got a healthy Khalid Duke that might make people forget about Felix pretty fast if he keeps playing like he is right now, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, this is not a surprise if K-State would go in and beat Missouri by three, four, five touchdowns if they would do that.
Like, not to me. No. Well, there may be some people surprised by
that. Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the progression of this program under Klieman, it's like, this is where we're at right now. And this is, I mean, if you won all those championships, granted at a lower level, you expect this program to be toward the top if you've got a coach like that. He's not going to stop what his goals are as a coach because he's now in FBS instead of FCS, right? And so, but as far as this weekend's game, I'm right with you. I think it'll be like a 10-point win for K-State, and maybe that comes with a field goal at the end to put some cushion on it, or maybe it comes with a touchdown at the end to put cushion. I don't know how it's all going to work, but that's what I had was 10, and I think Missouri's going to be ready to go. They're going to be more physical. I think they're going to be ready to make a statement of their own, right? And so I'm not sitting here thinking K-State's just going to roll over them and have no problem this weekend, but I think they have the team that can go in and get a win as long as they execute.
And I had somebody say, all right, you guys need to slow down a little bit on this, you know, because we mentioned 11-1, we mentioned college football playoff, maybe it's KU fan that's telling me this, I don't know. And yes, it might be a little premature that we maybe bring that up, but and this is the time when we need to revisit it. You look at K-State's schedule, okay? Missouri, on the road, we both think they'll win. Hosting Central Florida, who's a decent team, but at home. At Oklahoma State and at Texas Tech. If K-State gets through those two road games, at Oklahoma State, which they usually struggle, at Texas Tech, Texas Tech is a team that's hard to figure out right now. If K-State gets through those two road games in the Big 12 with wins at Stillwater and at Lubbock, and I think they definitely can win both, and I think there's a chance they could lose both. Road games are interesting. But if K-State would get through Oklahoma State and Texas Tech, and they're 6-0 going into home game against TCU, you should be talking possible college football playoff. Because at that point, you've got a road game at Texas and a road game at Kansas, and everything else is at home. All right? So you can start dreaming, definitely then. You can start dreaming any time you want. The other thing I'll say is KU and K-State are going to start 4-0. And in week five, we're going to find out. We're really going to find out about KU and K-State in week five. K-State will be at Stillwater against Oklahoma State, and KU will be at Texas. So there's, I don't know if it's even a big, bold prediction, because KU's probably going to be favored against BYU next week, too, assuming they beat Nevada. But K-State and KU are going to both be 4-0. They'll both be in the top 25, going into hostile environments in week five on the road at Stillwater and Austin, respectively. Do you disagree with that?
I'll say no right now.
No, they're not going to both be 4-0?
I don't disagree with what you said. You asked if I disagree.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I thought you were. I was like, really? Who are they going to lose to?
Right now, I don't know what BYU's got. Yeah, right. I'm not saying they can't come into lunch and win. So.
Oh, well, Central Florida could probably
come in and win. But what I would expect at this point right now, not having seen week three yet, I would expect both of them to be 4-0 going into that week.
How awesome would that be? That'd be very, very cool. Other Big 12 games, Iowa State's at Ohio, Long Island. Long Island at Baylor. I remember the first time I had a Long Island iced tea. That's a story for another day. Oklahoma at Tulsa. Villanova at Central Florida. South Alabama's Oklahoma State. Tarleton State at Texas Tech. Miami is at Cincinnati. Pitt is at West Virginia. Great rivalry there. BYU at Arkansas. Wyoming at Texas. Wyoming upset Texas Tech earlier this year, but that was in... Was that in Wyoming? Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Texas at home. Now, we'll see how Texas handles success after beating Alabama. TCU is at Houston. That's a Big 12 conference game now. And KU is at Nevada, as we mentioned, and K-State is at Missouri. Nebraska. I think they're going to get their first win, I think, but I don't know. They take on Northern Illinois coming up on Saturday, tomorrow night at 6 o'clock on FS1. They are 0-2. Northern Illinois is 1-1. This is a game that Nebraska should win. They should win comfortably. But if their quarterback turns the ball over a lot, you might very well be talking Monday about 0-3. Here is Matt Rhule in different mentalities during an 0-2 start.
There's a dichotomy here. There's two different, there's probably like two different groups, right? There's me who's sitting here like, man, we're 0-2. Okay, wow, we're so close to Minnesota. We should have won that game. Like, okay, we're close. Hey, Colorado, man, we just kind of let go of the rope a little bit in the third quarter, putting the ball on the ground uncharacteristically. Man, I probably didn't do a good enough job. Okay, let's just do this. It's just a process for me that's very, like, methodical, right? And it's like, okay, fix this. Oh, that looks good. Let's do more of this. For a lot of guys, it's like, man, 3 years of this, you know? And they're hearing that probably out there a lot, right? And it's like, for me, it's two games. For them, it's th- three or four years, and so it feels hopeless. To me, it feels exciting, exhilarating. It's like, all right, man, we competed against Minnesota all the way to the very end, and we let it go of it. Like, that was our fault. It wasn't like, hey, we got to go out and recruit some more. It's like, we're close, right? So that's the challenge. As I sit there in my office last night, it's 10 o'clock at night, or 9 o'clock at night, whatever it was. I'm sitting there kicking it with Giff or Nick or, I mean, I have great, great, great older players here, and they want to win so much. And just, you know, I'm talking to the younger players. It's just, they certainly feel, you know, like, I can just kind of go back and forth to work and listen to a little country music and not pay attention. They're hearing and seeing everything, and so it's affecting them, obviously. But it's affecting them because they care, and that's what I love about them, and so I'm just going to keep trying my best to help them.
No, that makes sense. All that to me makes sense. You know, it's fresh for him, but for mm-hmm. those that are still in the program, it's like, oh, no, here here we go again type of thing. I still think Matt Rhule is going to do fine in Nebraska, but what do I know? I also thought Scott Frost was going to work out, so I have no confidence, and I'm not going to wager anything on that. But I think Matt Rhule, you know, they mentioned during the broadcast last week, and Joel Klatt, I thought, made a very good point. He said Deion Sanders and Matt Rhule have a completely different, even though they both brought in a lot of players, they have a different philosophy, and that is Deion was about getting good right away, immediately, a lot mm-hmm. of transfers. Matt Rhule went with a lot of freshmen. Matt Rhule, I think, is trying to build something. Deion Sanders, I think, obviously, he's trying to build something, but he's trying to make it right away. Does anybody think, as long as Matt Rhule and Deion Sanders are both successful and they win enough at both Colorado and Nebraska, who do you think stays at their institution longer, Matt Rhule or Deion Sanders? And to me, that's a simple question, mm-hmm. simple answer. Matt Rhule, because Deion ain't going to stay in Colorado that long, in my opinion. If he kicks butt this year and they go 10-2 or something great, Colorado, he might not even be there more than a year. Now, maybe he'll stick it out where his, you know, kids are on the team and they until before they leave. But let's say it could be 2 or 3 years. Deion's gone. If they both do well. If you had to bet which coach is going to be at their institution longer, there's no question in my mind it'd be Matt Rhule.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. Like, I think I'd have thought that no matter what. Like,
because Deion's going to go to a bigger opportunity.
Without even seeing even these first two games that they played, right? Mm-hmm. Like, right at the hiring, it'd be like, if they both have success. I mean, if Deion turns that program around,
Matt Rhule's been in NFL. He's done that. Yeah. Been there, done that. He turned around Baylor. Deion's really just getting started in coaching in regards to getting the Power 5 Conference Colorado, and then who's to say he wouldn't get an opportunity with an NFL team?
Yeah, he says right now that that's not what he's shooting for, and I actually kind of believe
it. I think he's best suited for college. Yeah, I think the raw stuff works in pros as much. So I think there's a much bigger job out there for him if he does well at Colorado that he will grab in a heartbeat, is my point.
Yeah, I think that, like, Deion's a guy that's going to say what he's saying, and most of the time he's pretty convicted about what he's saying.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think he's making that up.
No, I agree.
The NFL's not his
I agree with you.
But Florida State, I think, is.
and
if something goes wrong there at Florida State, and it's not going wrong this year, they'll get a good team.
Yeah.
But if something would falter there and maybe he could get that job at some point, I mean, mm-hmm. I would think that's probably at the top of his list. I don't know.
I think
that they were kind of hesitant to hire him last time that was open because he didn't have a record,
resume,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think that would be a spot. I think anywhere down in the SEC would be a spot.
Agreed.
Or ACC down in that area, right?
Agreed. I agree with you totally. Top 25, Colorado does play Colorado State. And there's not a lot of good games this week. Next week, there's tons of great games. Mm-hmm. Could we spread them out better? Alabama's at South Florida. That's interesting because they never go on the road in the non-con except last year at Texas. First time they're going on the road against a non-Power 5 situation here.
Yeah.
Under Nick
Saban.
Coming
off of a loss. That's interesting.
That is interesting. I think it is very interesting. And the other one noteworthy to me is number 8 Washington at Michigan State. Both teams are 2-0, and you may say, well, what's the big deal there? Michigan State has an interim coach because Mel Tucker is suspended right now. So how is that team going to rally? Many teams, what do you see? They rally around the interim guy or the new guy, and they pull off a big win or an upset. And here we are. It's perfect. If I'm Washington, I'm pretty leery going into East Lansing for that game coming up at, I think it's 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The MIAA, if you're curious about that, we can tell you that my Pittsburgh State Gorillas, yes, I went to school there, I can say that. Pittsburgh State at Central Missouri, 1 o'clock. They are undefeated. Missouri Southern, Nebraska Kearney at noon tomorrow. Emporia State's at Northeastern State at 6. Washburn, Lincoln at 6. And Fort Hays State hosting Northwest Missouri at 7. Fort Hays State, I believe they are 0-2. Is that right? For Fort Hays State?
I think so.
No, they're not. They won their first one. My bad. They're 1-1. They're 1-1. My apologies. They're 1-1. And Northwest Missouri State is also 1-1, coming off a loss. When was the last time Northwest Missouri State lost back-to-back conference games? I bet that you have to go back to when I was in college.
I'm not going to try to.
I bet you have to go back to 96 before they actually got. That's when they turned the corner under Mel Trichman and started beating Pitt State. Luckily for me, when I was there. the NFL, the Chiefs looked to bounce back for their season opening loss to the Lions. They head to Jacksonville. The Jaguars won the opener against against the Colts last Sunday. They weren't super impressive, but they got it done, and you don't apologize for a road win. Chiefs and Jaguars kick off at noon coming up on Sunday. Pregame at 11 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake and the Chiefs Radio Network. Hey, how about this? It's the only Sunday noon game the entire NFL season. It's the only Sunday noon game for the Chiefs the entire NFL season. They do play on a noon on Christmas Day.
I was going to say it's
but
like
that's a Monday.
Yeah.
Max, what the heck is Dusty drinking? Because 12-0, I want some stuff that Dusty's drinking. That's true, Max. I didn't say 12-0. Dusty just threw it out there for fun. I think he just wanted to get you riled up, Max. I think that's why Dusty's.
Hey, man, like, I'm not scared of any team in this conference.
And that's what I'm saying.
And the way that they play, Am I predicting that's going to happen?
Are the odds against them? Absolutely not.
I'm not predicting that.
Right.
But if you're talking about a ceiling, and if they continue to, and they blow out Missouri this weekend and have all that confidence going into the conference, there's not a team I'm scared of in this conference.
Well, listen, if you look, Oklahoma State.
I'm not saying they're going to do it.
Oklahoma State is playing three different quarterbacks, and offensively, they're not that great. Texas Tech, they're up and down right now. I mean, they're talented. TCU, I mean, their defense isn't very good. Houston is not great, and that's a home game. At Texas is the big one, but by the time they play Texas at that point, Texas may have lost three games.
Nobody knows where anybody's going to be at that point.
Right, and then but Baylor at home. Baylor lost to Texas State week one. At Kansas, Jalen Daniels is even going to be healthy by that time. Who knows? And then host Iowa State. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the only game on that schedule that scares you big time would be at Texas. And we know K-State can play with the big boys in this conference. They've proven that. So, yeah, I think, I mean, it definitely got Max's attention. Let's put it that
I'm sure
way.
It got plenty of people's attention. Yeah, but right. It's like we're talking about a ceiling here.
Right.
And if they go do that, then why cap it?
Right. Also, on a piggyback here, Matt Rhule doesn't exactly have a track record of staying in places very long. Well, I think he would have been Baylor for a while, but when the NFL comes knocking, how do you turn down all the money the NFL brought to this table? Yeah, I mean, you got to go.
Yeah.
You got to try it. If you want to coach the NFL, he got a lot of money to go to the NFL. He would have stayed in the NFL for the rest of his career had it gone well, but he got fired.
Yeah, exactly.
So the reason he didn't stay long there is because he got fired. Baylor, I don't know what coach would have said, yeah, I'll stay at Baylor and turn down all this money from Carolina. So now, did he bounce from Temple to Baylor? Well, who wouldn't? I mean, you got a Power 5 job with Baylor. So I guess the track record proves that he has jumped. I get that, although one of them was forced. But I think Matt Rhule, at this stage of his career, and he knows Nebraska, is still a brand name, believe it or not. It's still noteworthy, okay? Might not be the same level as some other brands like it once was, but it's still noteworthy. I don't see Matt Rhule jumping back to the pros if he gets another opportunity because he's been there, done that. Some college coaches are just destined to be college coaches. Even look at Nick Saban. He didn't even do well in his 1 year at Miami. Urban Meyer was a train wreck at Jacksonville. Those are two of the most successful college football coaches in the history of college football. They couldn't do it. So why is Matt Rhule going to say, I can do it the second time around? And maybe he does want another shot in the NFL. But I don't think he's going to leave Nebraska. In 5 years, if Nebraska has a overall really good record in 5 years, and he turns things around to where they're at least competing to be close to being in a Big Ten title game and maybe make it, I don't think Matt Rhule is going to jump from Nebraska to something. I guess, you know, if Alabama came calling, who would turn that down, right? So,
yeah.
But I don't think Matt Rhule would go from Nebraska to. I don't think Matt Rhule would go from Nebraska to. I don't know. Maybe he would. Nebraska to Michigan? I don't know. I'm just trying to think of something to be somewhat of a step up, but not gigantic.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if Michigan's wanting him, he's having a lot of success, right? And so if you're having a lot of success at Nebraska, who has a tradition-rich program in the past, right? Like, why wouldn't
people be interested?
I don't think I'd be leaving for Michigan. I'm in the same conference.
Right.
And I can win just as easily here as I can at Michigan, like at the top level, right?
Yeah.
And I know we're a lot of years removed from what Nebraska really was in the past, but
– right.
if I turn that around and I'm winning at an elite level, I'm not going. I don't know. You know, maybe an SEC school, but Bama.
Do you think? I don't know. Do you think that coaches? This would be a good one for a couple of people that texted me right now. Do you think that college football coaches? Let's just start with that one. Do you think college football coaches have a list? Maybe it's a mental list, or they write it down. Do you think that all of these coaches, head coaches, or even you could be in a coordinator and you have higher aspirations, do you think they each have like this little list, a short list of, if that job ever came up, I'll take it no matter what? Like, I couldn't possibly turn it down. You know what I'm saying?
But I think there's some of them.
I think so.
I don't know that every one of them has one, but
right.
There are definitely
now,
some.
If you've got your dream job already, and especially if you're alma mater, sometimes you're never going to leave. But Roy, you know, Roy Williams said he wasn't going to leave me at Carolina. It came up a second time, of course. Matt Rhule, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what his list is or where he'd want to go. I mean, he's been willing to go from Temple to Baylor, Nebraska, so geography doesn't seem to bother him. He was in Carolina. I would have to look up where he's from originally. Maybe they're in where he went to school. I don't have all that in front of me right now. Maybe there's a college job that would be closer to where he originally grew up that he would want to close out his career.
Penn State.
Okay, Penn State. Maybe.
Penn State came available.
Okay, then Penn That's State might he, be. You know, okay, there you go. So maybe Penn State would be the dream
volunteer assistant
job.
In 1998. Yeah. I mean, I that contradicts what I just said if he can win in the Big Ten, but that there's a I think there's a pretty good track record of if it's your alma mater, that could change.
Yeah, and he was short-term at Temple, but everybody be short-term at Temple when you do well in a short period of time, and then a Power 5 comes calling. I mean, you're going to – Turner Gill was like, yeah, things are good at Buffalo, but KU's going to be dumb enough to give me a couple million dollars a year. Yeah, I'll go there.
Former Nebraska quarterback. As I'm looking at his Wikipedia, he was actually at Temple for 8 years.
8 years?
One got split up, and then he came back as a head coach. He was an assistant for 5, and then 3 as a head coach.
So he was there
split.
For 8 years.
He was a Giants assistant offensive line coach in 2012, and then came back to Temple for 13 to 16. But from 6 to 11, he was an assistant at Temple.
So he was at Temple for 8 out of 9 years.
Came back to be the head coach.
Well, that's not really short term.
No.
Interesting.
You just kind of look at it. If you're just looking at his head coaching record, it's 13 to 16.
Right, so it looks short term.
There were 3 seasons, right?
So it looks short term.
There were 4 seasons at whatever you count that if it was 13, 14, 15, 16.
Right. Of course, it depends how you look at it. Like, well, short-term in regards to being a head coach.
But you're also, you know, you can look at his coaching track record here and see that he's taking the step
He's making a step up every time.
Until Carolina didn't work out, and then he steps back down to college. And if he can win at Nebraska, I don't see him going anywhere. Unless
at least
Penn State,
unless it's that dream job.
Maybe that's what's the top of his list.
Which no coach is usually going to come out and say, that's my dream job. And then it comes open, and like, oh, wait a minute. Now I put myself in a corner. I got to accept it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So back to the Chiefs. The Jags overall, Andy Reid, thoughts on the Jags. They're a very good team. The Chiefs beat in the division round of the playoffs last year. And remember, it was Chad Henne had to come to the rescue for a portion of that game.
There's a dichotomy here. There's two different.
Matt Rhule, I love you and everything. We've talked a lot about you, but
Matt, just leave our show.
Would you please leave us alone and focus on the Huskers? You got to get a win at some point, or you won't be around very long. It will be short term.
Doug does a nice job with that group, as do his two coordinators, Mike and Press. They've got strong offense. They've got a strong defense. Good special teams. They've got good team speed and good defensive front. So, again, it's really the same guys that we played against last year for the most part.
And then the Jags defense, they are highly thought of, according to Coach Reid.
41, he's a good player. You know, I mean, both those defensive ends are phenomenal players. They're fast. They have high motors. And I wouldn't slight their backups at all. They can bring it too. The inside guys are talented. They'll jump in. Even if you're 3 wides, they'll jump into their base personnel and every once in a while and give you the business there. And, you know, when they're in nickel, they've got good rushers inside. Linebackers are fast. Secondary's aggressive. We know that. 2 good corners. They're a good defense all the way around.
So this will be a test. We know the Jags are a good and team, up-and-coming team. They're well coached. Mahomes on the Jaguars' talented defensive line.
Yeah, I mean, they're a talented defensive front. I mean, I've played them twice and understand that. This will be a great challenge for our offensive line, I have a lot of trust in those guys. So we'll just kind of try to keep building as an offense, and when I need to get the ball in my hand, I'll get it out of my hand, and then when we need to take a shot, I'll trust in those guys to make the blocks.
I would prefer that the ball stays in his hands on 3rd and 1, but anywho.
I digress. So a couple things I want to talk about the Chiefs before we wrap up the show with the big crescendo, and that's Royals baseball. Actually, let's just get out of the way. Royals are 46-101. They welcome the Astros to town, are 83-64. Three-game set in KC tonight at 7:10. Astros have a one-game lead over the Rangers in AL West, and the Royals have been mathematically eliminated, for about 200 days or so. All right, back to the Chiefs. Kelce, is he back? We don't know yet. The information that we were hearing, it's leading us to believe that he will play and dress and go against the Jaguars, which is obviously a huge step in the right direction, and it will help those other wide receivers, which leads me to my second question. Will the wide receivers show up this time as they didn't? And I think they will. Maybe I'm too optimistic, but I think usually when you hear so many negative things, Kadarius Toney's heard horrible things, Sky Moore's heard horrible things, the receivers hear about how bad they were, no Kelce, and they need a security blanket. These things that the Chiefs did against the Lions are very easily correctable. Dropping passes, simply, you can catch them. These guys have all established they can catch the ball. They wouldn't be in NFL if they couldn't catch the ball. So that can be fixed rather easily. Running the patterns to where you don't have two receivers in the same spot, which happened multiple times in the Thursday opener against the Lions, that should get cleaned up fairly quickly, I would hope. That's correctable. And then getting Kelce back helps cover up a few of the warts from time to time. Getting Chris Jones back covers up some things, although the defense really played pretty well against the Lions. Only gave up 14 points. What's his impact going to be? How many snaps is he going to play? Is he in shape? Is he in football shape? Can he be disruptive and destructive inside and pick up where he left off last year when he had a career year? Because the Jaguars are maybe a little vulnerable on the inside on the offensive line. That's another question that a lot of people have. Another question I have is, what has Andy got in store for short yardage situations? And I don't feel very confident it's going to get any better, but that's something I'm going to be watching, and maybe Kelce, obviously being back, will help with that, but they've struggled short yardage with Kelce the last couple of years too. And the last one that a lot of people made a big deal about, and I think is blown out of proportion by the national media, and because it was the NFL season kickoff opener it was really focused on, and that is Jawan Taylor leaving early or appearing to leave early or moving early or not being lined up on the line of scrimmage. And there are a lot of people that have made some really good points about that, and that is Joey Bosa was losing his mind and he got a personal foul or unsportsmanlike conduct because he was tired of Taylor and the advantage he had. People close to the situation with the Chargers, mm-hmm. have said that the reason he got so frustrated was he had kept telling them he's not on the line of scrimmage. He's moving early. And that was a playoff game, and the officials were like, no, he's fine. And he got so frustrated eventually that he threw his helmet and got a penalty and so forth and so on. It didn't help the Chargers, and he lost that game after being up 27-0. This isn't the first rodeo, the first time Jawan Taylor's done this. Suddenly he's a Kansas City Chief on national TV with the only game to watch. But if you actually go watch every NFL game going all the way back to at least 2018, so the last 5 years, the left tackle and right tackle are not on the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Now, there might be some tackles that are a little further off the line of scrimmage than others, but the point is they're all off the line of scrimmage. The New England Patriots, go back and watch the D Ford's offsides penalty. I remember talking on the show, D's offsides, get it, but so are the Patriots' left and right tackles. But that doesn't get called. And did D Ford, did that really have an impact on the play? No.
No, not
but a left tackle, right tackle who gets to sit 2 yards in the backfield absolutely impacts the play because it prevents the quarterback from getting hit by pass rushers off the edge. It's harder to rush a guy that's 2 yards back because you got to run 2 yards before contact or 1 yard or half a yard. Whatever you want to say. Listen, go watch college football games. Watch every single one. Watch professional football games, every single one. And I can tell you, I watched it last night. This is not something new. The left tackle and right tackle, or almost every single NFL team, is not on the line of scrimmage. By the letter of the law, they're not. They are not. Now, the second part of the equation that those guys don't do, that Jawan Taylor does, it looks like he does leave early. But here's the thing. Are you leaving early when the other offensive linemen don't react as quickly, but the ball is still snapped? Mm-hmm. See, everybody's caught up in the other lineman didn't move, Taylor moved, so Taylor's offsides. No, that's not what you should be comparing it to at all. You should be comparing
when is the ball snapped?
You watch the snap, yeah.
And he's really good at anticipating or knowing when to move when the ball is snapped. I've seen video, and I'm not sitting here defending Juwan Taylor because I think there were times he was offsides. And like I said, I stand by this. Donovan Smith and Juwan Taylor are both typically offsides. Every left and right tackle is not lined up on line of scrimmage. You can go ahead and every single team is guilty of it. But in regards to him leaving early, backpedaling early, leaving early, actually, if you go back and watch some of the video, it's been broken down. You could argue that the three of the other offensive linemen are leaving late because it's about the snap. If Creed Humphrey snaps it and Taylor reacts immediately on the snap and he just has the timing down, whatever, and Trey Smith and Donovan Smith and Joe Tooney don't react as quickly, it ain't that Juwan Taylor's offsides. It's a false start. It's the other three are a little bit later and not as quick when the ball is. They don't time it as well. So one thing does stand out when you watch it live, but what you really need to be watching, and I'm learning to do it too, you really need to be seeing when's the ball snapped.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the key to whether he leaves early. And Juwan Taylor's done this for some years now. And the NFL have been warned about it. The teams have been warned about it. I mean, the Jaguars know all about it because they had Juwan Taylor the last few years. And there are times where they can go back and prove and say, you know, actually, the ball is being snapped. He's getting an early start because the other guys aren't getting off the ball as quickly because they don't time it as well. Are there times where he takes advantage of that? Oh, I don't think there's any doubt that he does. He even almost admits that. And if anywhere you can get a slight edge in football, you're going to try to get that slight edge. But I do think it's interesting that this is a gigantic story, but he's been doing it for a while with other teams or other team. And the NFL, there's reports yesterday, the NFL is going to crack down on this and the debacle of that Thursday night game. Well, what do you mean? Just because the announcers got their panties in a bunch about it. This has been happening for years in the NFL with linemen doing what Juwan Taylor does. The second part of the equation is he leaving early? The first part, everybody's lined up where they're not on line of scrimmage. Almost everybody.
Here's a tough thing about.
I would love to see him clean it up. I would love for them to say, you know what? But let's throw a flag and we'll throw it until your left tackle and right tackle actually get on line of scrimmage. You know what that would do, though? And here's why it won't. This is why this will not change. This is why it will not be enforced. The being off the line of scrimmage, the leaving early with the little jump step that Taylor has, that may get called. But in regards to being off the line of scrimmage, I will tell you why this will not get fixed. The NFL doesn't want that part fixed.
No.
Why would they? Because then the edge rushers get an advantage, and the quarterback's under duress, and your star quarterbacks are more likely to get hit, dropped, hurt, or offensive productivity goes down, and the league is built on scoring points. The league is built with all the rules in favor of the offense. No, they... Deep down, they probably will never admit it, deep down, why would they want to change the left tackle, right tackle? Why would they want to really, truly enforce the rules and call them all the time and break them of that habit? And the next thing you know, they're getting blown by. And then these left and right tackles suddenly don't make as much money, do they?
No, exactly. Listen, the alignment is never going to change because, like, you've let them do it for so long. Like, why are you going to change that? And it's like every single team in the NFL would have to change what they do offensively.
Absolutely.
They'd have to relearn how they're blocking, where they're at snap, and all that stuff. Listen, I was aggravated last year watching that Jaguars game because I thought Taylor was jumping at least half the time.
Yeah, I agree. Watching the Chiefs.
Here's the hard part of that, though, is like if you do go back and people have looked at this, and I'm sure officials have meetings and they study film and things like that. Somebody up at the top of that does that, right?
Sure.
And I'm sure that they have seen this, and somebody's probably brought it to their attention by now. Listen, like you said, he's been doing it for 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Somebody's brought it to their attention by now. So they watch this and they see that, oh, he's timing snap really, really good a lot of times here.
No, so
how am I going to be as an official naked eye?
Yes.
Just looking at this and saying false start.
Right.
When I can't really see when the snap happened.
If you don't know for sure, you don't throw your flag.
The one on the last drive was really egregious.
He
was way early.
And
so they called it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm here, he's moving just millisecond before that ball is under Humphrey and going up,
right?
Then I can't call that. And so that's how he gets away with some of the false starts, because some of them are false starts. There's no question.
Right.
But when it's bang, bang like that, and he has a track record of doing it well, of timing the snap. How am I going to throw that flag? I'm going to look like a fool when it wasn't a flag.
As soon as the ball moves, it plays live.
Yeah.
As soon as Creed Humphrey moves that football a millimeter, it's a live play. And it's interesting you say the bang-bang part. And this is the other thing that and TV really puts the officials in a tough spot here. And then it creates the fans turning on officials, which and that is slow motion replay.
Yeah.
And this happened last night. I'm watching the Thursday night NFL game. It's the Vikings and the Eagles, and there was a pass to A.J. Brown, and it was kind of a bang-bang play with a DB hit him when the ball was coming into his hands. And watching it live, I thought that could be interference, but I'm not sure, and there was no flag. They slow it down, and he clearly got there half a second early, and it should have been PI based on a replay.
Mm-hmm.
But the officiating former official that's in the box now with all these broadcasts, he said the officials they're not judging this in slow motion like all of you back home. If it's a bang-bang play, they're not going to call it because they don't know for sure if he got there early. Now, if they know for sure he got there early, they're going to call it. And sometimes they get those wrong, too. But his point, and there was another bang-bang play later in the game the opposite way when the Vikings had the ball. And it was the exact same thing. And you could hear Herb Street almost sound like he disagreed. Well, yeah, but you're getting the benefit of a slow-motion replay. If you're actually on the field, Kirk Herb Street, or Wade Gerstner or Dusty Dynas, you would probably not call it either because it's such a bang-bang play. So the officiating expert said when you're an official, you are taught, if it's a bang-bang play, to usually not throw your flag. It's when it's obvious. Going back to what you said, the officials are looking. They're along the sideline, the side judges, and they're looking to see if guys line in the neutral. First of all, they got to see if the defensive guy is in the neutral zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
They've got to decide if they got enough people on the line of scrimmage. Although I don't know all the responsibilities on the officiating parts, but you got to have enough people on the line of scrimmage, or that's a penalty, right? You can't have a illegal formation. Tight end has to be covered. Blah blah blah. There's a lot of things for officials to worry about pre-snap.
Wide receiver sitting here talking to you while you're trying to do that.
Am I good? And then they're supposed to be able to tell when Jerron Taylor leaves. You know, one nanosecond early before the ball is snapped. So, and sometimes our eyes play tricks on us, right? Like, I think that's what's happened on some of these situations. Oh my God, Jerron Taylor's offsides. That is just a debacle. Actually, the three other linemen are slow, and the center snapped it, and that looks slow because he got to snap it. And the tackle is on the edge, and he's standing up, so it's obvious more. Creed Humphrey can move more than other people because it's a little bit harder to see on TV, and you don't notice that. And so our eyes kind of deceive us sometimes. And there's no doubt that angles and replay sometimes can deceive us as well. But as the official said, a former official says, if it's a bang-bang play, you're told not to throw the flag. I think this is what happens with Jerron Taylor. It's a bang-bang. You can't say without a shadow of a doubt he's early until the one he was way early on. That was obvious. To everybody else, they think it's obvious. Well, did the TV production crew zoom in a little tighter and show the ball being hiked? They didn't give you that information, did they? So this is not me supporting Jerron Taylor because he's a Chief player. This is me saying, yeah, I think he's taken advantage of it sometimes. He probably has been. But he is so close, he's given the benefit of the doubt because it's a bang-bang play.
Yeah. Listen, do what you do until somebody tells you to stop doing it.
Why not?
Right?
Like, right.
Until I'm getting penalized six times a game, I'm going to do what I'm doing.
Right. Right. And Andy Reid said that he's like they've talked to him and that they maybe made a slight adjustment because I think they know there's going to be a lot of pressure on officials to flag Jerron Taylor coming up. And I hope it doesn't happen to where they get it wrong. And then TV shows the ball being snapped this week and then they get it wrong and it costs the Chiefs the game or something. But anyway, what's the biggest thing you're looking at with this Chiefs Jaguar game? What's your biggest thing? Are you watching Chris Jones? Kelce back? Short yardage? Wide receivers?
If Kelce's there, if it's fine, Chris Jones.
What's your biggest concern going into this game?
I want to see the wide receivers catch the ball.
That's your biggest concern?
That's all I want to see.
Gotcha.
Because if they can do that, then there's not much to worry about.
Gotcha.
With the offense.
Bills, Bengals, Chargers, Chiefs are all 0-1. Chiefs fall to 0-2, or they right the ship and go 1-1 and get a nice win in conference on the road?
I got to win.
Got to win?
By a field goal.
This game worries me quite a bit. And the other thing that worries me is Doug Peterson knows Andy Reid, and Doug Peterson will go for it multiple times in this game, and that concerns me as well. But I'm going to put my faith ultimately in 15 at the end of the game, as long as the receivers catch the dang ball. So Mahomes can't throw and catch it. If maybe someday he can. As of now, he can't.
Yeah.
He needs to work a little harder at his game. Go Chiefs. That'll be coming up Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, the only Sunday noon game of the year, kickoff at noon, on your home for the Chiefs, North Central Kansas, Z96.3. The Lake. Once again, our schedule tonight?
Yeah, Football Express, Cunningham Telephone and Cable at 5:40. We'll have pregame at 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock. Katy Country 94, the Bullet Trojan, Channel Bullet at Republic County. Z96.3 The Lake, KatyCountry94.com, Logan Palko at Lakeside. And we will conclude at 10:05 on Katy Country 94, the local high school football scoreboard show from State Farm Insurance and Bullet in Osborne.
Very well.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or Sunflower State Radio. .com